Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Kevin Ingram, Vanderbilt play-by-play and host for Vanderbilt Athletics. Kevin, what's going on? How are we doing?
Doing good, Robbie. How are you?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today. So lots to get to today, Kevin. There was a big week for Vanderbilt, adding volleyball as another varsity sport as well. Let's just start on that front. The significance of that announcement by Vanderbilt in your mind in terms of where their athletic department is moving at the moment.
Yeah, I think it is a significant announcement. I mean, it's a sport that Vanderbilt had a long time ago, back like late 70s, early 80s for a short amount of time, but it's a sport that's also very popular in this area. I mean, you think about the quality of high school volleyball, like all the AAU programs, and just how many kids play volleyball around here. I think it'll be a big success. Now, it's only a few years down the road before the program actually gets cranked up again, and they'll hire a coach later on in the year, but it's supposed to start at the 25-26 academic year. But you know, the SEC's really good in volleyball. Kentucky won the national championship just last year. There's lots of great programs in the SEC in that sport, as there are in lots of sports. So I think it's one that'll be received well. They'll play at Memorial, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see that when it gets going here in a few years.
Should this be taken, Kevin, as by Vanderbilt fans, you think, as I guess another sign of, you know, things going well? You know, obviously, you know, this has been a big week. I mean, Vanderbilt's announced an NIL arrangement, and of course details on the basketball operations center too. But do you look at volleyball, should fans look at volleyball as sort of part of this momentum that the athletic department seems to have overall?
Yeah, I think so. And Candace Lee talked a little bit about that, Vanderbilt's athletics director, when the announcement was made a couple days ago, Joe. And I think it is a sign of progress, and that adding on, in a day and age where you see schools taking away sports, Vanderbilt is adding one here. And and again, the quality of play in that sport in the SEC is really good and around this area. So, yeah, I think it is a sign of progress. And there have been some positive things go on this week. It's kind of championship week for some of the sports in the SEC. And, bowling just got done going to the national championship series. And baseball had a good weekend last weekend. So, it's been a good few days over on West End.
Kevin, your reaction to the Scottie Pippen Jr. news announcing he's declaring for the NBA draft? I don't think a huge surprise there, but how would you put into words his legacy at Vanderbilt now that we know that he's moving on?
Yeah, he's been a terrific player and representative for the program, no doubt about it. I was not especially surprised. I sort of thought that even in watching him throughout the season, I was like, we better enjoy this, because this is probably going to be his final season with Vanderbilt. And when the game was over in Cincinnati against Xavier a few weeks ago in the NIT, I kind of thought that was probably going to be the end. I mean, he sort of held out hope and, left the light on. If he wanted to come back for another season, I think everybody would have been thrilled. But you sort of understand where he is in his career, too. And I guess one of the things I wonder is, like, okay, what if he came back and played another year of college basketball? What does he gain? I mean, obviously a huge gain for the program, but for him personally, what can he do to help his stock even more as far as having a pro career? So I wish him nothing but the best. My dealings with Scotty were terrific. He's a really nice guy, and enjoy getting to know him. And people will see the points that he scored and the way he played. But I think one thing that may go a little bit overlooked is his toughness. I mean, he really took a beating in a lot of the games this season. And yeah, he played a lot of minutes and scored a lot of points, over 1,500 in three seasons. So, back-to-back all-conference selections and 20-point-per-game seasons. And, yeah, he really has had a nice career at Vanderbilt. Wish him well. I hope things go well in his pro career. And I just get the feeling that he's going to catch on somewhere. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to happen, but I think he's going to be a success wherever he goes next.
So almost instantaneously, Kevin, Vanderbilt adds a transfer, but also another freshman to this class, which is, one of the best Vanderbilt men's basketball recruiting classes in quite a while. What do you know and think about the two new additions and how they fit into, next year's team? What do you think of the roster as it stands right now for 2022-23?
Yeah, I can't. I don't know a tremendous amount about the freshman that they added this week. You know, as far as the incoming recruiting class, I know the guard they got, the transfer they added, the guy who feels like can help them out right away. They needed a veteran guard who can be versatile and do lots of different things. It certainly was Scottie Pippen Jr. Leaving. They need to fill that. That's a lot to fill. I mean, you're talking about 20 points. You're talking about several assists and steals and all those things that he did. And so I think adding that veteran guard is really going to help them. But, yeah, it looks really exciting as far as, like, the recruiting class. I know they already felt really good about that group that they had assembled for this upcoming season. So to add another part to that, I think, is nothing but a plus. And you got a pretty solid nucleus of guys coming back. You know, both the big guys will be back, Quint Malore-Brown and Liam Robbins, who we saw toward the end of the season. You know, guys like Jordan Wright, who's a veteran presence on the team, and you saw some others that they made progress throughout this year. So I think they have a nice core coming back, and you add these guys, and you know, it's like every program in college basketball. It feels like, you know, teams are in more a state of flux, and the rosters change, you know, with the transfer portal, and gosh, you see 1,400 guys in there. It's just unbelievable to me. But Vanderbilt, like a lot of teams, turning the roster over a little bit and some changes, but I think the future looks bright after a really nice finish to this last season. You know, went to Tampa, won a couple in the SEC tournament, and did the same thing in the NIT.
Kevin Ingram on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Kevin, you mentioned the baseball team a little bit earlier. Obviously, big series win last weekend against Florida. And we know with Vanderbilt and Tim Corbin and company who they are and what they are, and what matters is how they build as the season goes along. But I'm just curious, from your perspective, where is this team right now as they head down into the final stretch here of, you know, conference play, heading up in Kentucky this weekend as they try to build toward another regional? Where do you think this group is now with their lineup?
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. They've been searching for consistency out of the lineup throughout the year. And obviously, pitching-wise, you have two of the best in the program's history to replace in Rocker and Leiter. So you change things around as far as the weekend rotation. Chris McElvain's been on Friday, and Carter Holton, a really talented left-hander, the freshman on Saturday. The Sunday spot's been he moved some players in and out of it there. But I think the lineup has really been the thing that's been puzzling at times for Tim Corbin and the coaching staff to just find that consistency on offense. You think back to that series a couple weeks ago against Auburn. You scored 19 runs in the Saturday game, but really not a lot of production in the games on either side of that. They played really well in the series against Florida. Going into that, we were talking to Tim Corbin on our Monday night show, and he said, we just need to play some close games and win some close games. Win or lose, the games have been kind of lopsided both ways, but they got certainly three doses of that over the weekend against Florida. They won those first two, and all three games that came from behind, and it looked like had a chance to sweep after Bulger hit the home run in the ninth inning on Sunday, but couldn't get to the finish line in that one. But I think they felt great coming out of that weekend. It felt certainly like that could be a building point for them in this season, as now you head into the back half of SEC play. It's hard to believe that the conference season is halfway over. You'll start the final 15-game stretch this weekend. But, yeah, I think just trying to figure out who fits where, and you knew going into the season it'd be a bit of a work in progress, but I think just trying to figure out how it all fits together has been a challenge. Jack Bulger has been great lately. Gosh, he's been just red hot at the plate. And I think he's one of those players that playing in the field and catching serves him well when he bats too, because it kind of gives him that balance that maybe he needs. And talking to the coaches, they have said that same thing. But yeah, you've got some good hitters on this team. It's just finding that consistency is what they've been looking for.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, Bradfield with the huge hit. I feel like he's such a catalyst for this team, Kevin. Just regardless of, you know, he's a terrific defensive player. He does a lot on the bases. But as an emotional leader, would you look at him as a sophomore as the emotional leader of this team?
Yeah, I think, Joe, that's pretty accurate. You see the emotion out of him after something big happens, like that three-run triple in that game on Saturday. I mean, you saw his reaction when he got to third base. But it's funny, they dropped him down to second for a couple games last week in the batting order and batted Davis Diaz leadoff for the midweek game against Western Kentucky and then the first game of the Florida series. And I did just maybe give him a little different perspective on the lineup. He had been the leadoff man since March of 2021. I think it was like 81 straight games or something like that. But, yeah, he's definitely an emotional leader on this team. And when he gets on base, things happen. And he's shown a little more power this season. He's hit three home runs. And he's just one of those guys you root for him to hit one in the right field corner just to watch him run the bases, because yeah, he is so exciting of a player, and as you said, he's as good as it gets in college baseball on the field and, you know, patrolling center field. But yeah, he's a key guy, and you know, in production out of Enrique, and you know, Dominic Keegan's been super consistent, and Spencer Jones has had a really nice season. I know they're still hoping you know, Carter Young can come along and show some of the power, certainly, that he had last year when he led the team with 16 home runs. But yeah, going back to Enrique, he is such a huge part of this team at the plate and in the field, and certainly on the bases.
Kevin, last thing for you here before we let you go. I mean, I know you tweeted about this the other night, but I'm just curious for your thoughts on Terry Crisp and his legacy here with the Predators and in this city in terms of kind of building this fan base.
Oh, no question. I love Crispy. You know, I've been around this area since the Predators arrived, and you know, I think all the way back to the very beginning in, you know, the 98-99 season. I moved down here right about the time the Predators, you know, were starting up, and just having a chance to not only watch Pete Weber and Terry Crisp on TV and on radio, but to have a chance to get to know those guys, it's really been special. And like a lot of people, I learned a lot about hockey from listening to Terry Crisp and Pete. And he's one of those people, and you guys know this, you've been around him. If you're around Terry for any amount of time, he feels like, you know, you're good friends with him, and you know, it's like talking to a cool uncle or, you know, a grandpa in the case of some people. But he's just so much fun to be around. And for one season in the 03-04 season, Willie Donick and I basically traded jobs. There was some transition in the radio stations, and so Willie called the games for Belmont, and I did the Predators radio pre and post game and intermissions and that sort of thing. And I really got to know Crispy better that season, and it was really special to be around those guys. And even go on a couple road trips, because, I mean, you go on a road trip with Pete and Terry, and it's like they're rock stars. I mean, they know everybody. I think we went to Montreal, and I went with them to Detroit, and it was so entertaining to be around those dudes and just hear stories and about traveling and hockey and everything else. But he's a really special guy. Terry and Sheila are just great people, and their family. So I'm happy for him getting to finish up his career this way. Hopefully the Preds will have a playoff run to make it feel even better. I felt bad the other day. They had a beautiful ceremony at the first intermission on Sunday, and then the Blues come out and score 7 goals in the second period. It's like, this isn't supposed to happen this way. But, yeah, I love Crispy and wish him nothing but the best, and thank him for everything he's done for hockey in this area.
The great thing is he was on the call, so he got to even do a little bit of, oh, my gosh, some of those goals.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. Right. Hey, before you go, Kevin, before you go, now every once in a while I'll do like this, Christian and Grayson and but it's a terrible Coach K. You are the master. Give us a little taste of the real Coach K impersonation.
Well, Joe, I just thank you for all the things you've done for basketball. I know I pretty much owned Tom Izzo over the course of my career, and I apologize for that. But I told Christian and Grant and Bobby and all of our other great players, I said, the first thing I said was, we're going to win this basketball game. I said, Grant, can you make the pass? I wanted to get a positive reaction. But, Joe, I just appreciate the things you've done for the game of basketball.
Oh, such a legend. The great Kevin Ingram, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, Kevin, appreciate so much
incredible.
Taking time to join us today.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right, Kevin Ingram from Vanderbilt, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, play-by-play reporter, host of the Commodore Hour. Kevin does it all over there at Vanderbilt, including potentially the best Coach K impression I've ever heard in my entire life. We'll continue to take your thoughts
basketball
on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Well, Joe, I just thank you for all the things you've done for basketball. I know I pretty much owned Tom Izzo over the course of my career, and I apologize for that. But I told Christian and Grant and Bobby and all of our other great players, I said, the first thing I said was, we're going to win this basketball game. I said, Grant, can you make the pass? I wanted to get a positive reaction. But, Joe, I just appreciate the things you've done for the game of basketball.
Is that potentially the best Coach K impression of all time?
That's how it's done. I mean, you know, I haven't heard that many people try it. I'm sure there are some good ones out there, but I'd put him up in a contest with somebody.
way he says basketball.
Yeah, basketball. Grant, can you throw the pass?
It's dead on.
Thank you to Kevin Ingram for joining us in the last segment. Chris on the text line says, that was the best Coach K impression I've ever heard, hands down. Even got to dig in on Joe Spartans as well, which by Chris saying that is getting in to dig on your Spartans as well.
Yeah, my Spartans. Yes, my beloved Spartans. It's fine.
That's great stuff.
That was very good.
William in Madison texting in says, where are the benches going to be in Memorial for volleyball?
Yeah.
We worried about that?
Well, we're going to spend the whole show on that tomorrow. We can't quite get to it today, but that will be the whole show tomorrow. Very urgent question.
Yeah, they got until 2025 to figure that part out, I think.
William in Madison.
Hey, it's a valid question. Where are they going to end up putting stuff?
I don't know the answer, so it's a valid question. William in Madison, today I call you Billy Madison.
I got a text that said we should have had Kevin do Rick Pitino. That'd have been good.
I haven't heard. Does he do a good Pitino?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't remember that one. Now, well, that's next time.
Next time.
Next time, Pitino.
Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, 615-737-1025. Hal Gill coming up at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they got a couple days off here before they head into a big weekend with a back-to-back against Tampa and Minnesota coming up on Sunday as well. Joe, we've discussed the A.J. Brown situation with Deebo Samuel requesting a trade from San Francisco. A.J. Brown, his contract is still yet to be figured out. You know, I still, at the end of the day, I think that the Titans and A.J. Brown will come to an agreement, and I think that he'll have a long-term contract here. I will say, with the Deebo Samuel stuff, even, you know, taking the Instagram Live part of it out that we talked about with A.J. on the phone with Deebo, apparently, and apparently, according to Deebo Samuel, the Titans saying to his agent that they're offering him $20 million, and that's it. He can probably make more elsewhere. It just doesn't feel like that's what the Titans would say, in my opinion. But that aside, like the amount of movement right now from wide receivers and really players in general in this league. Devonta Adams going from Green Bay to Vegas. Now you got Deebo Samuel requesting a trade as well. Like, you could see pretty quickly that if negotiations really with anybody right now in the NFL start to go the wrong way, I wonder how quick teams or players are to pull the trigger on, yep, just trade me. I'm done. Trade me. Like, it seems like that's happening more frequently nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's this offseason continue. It was already the most eventful offseason. It's amazing. Like, this sets the standard. I think that we're going to see more that have interesting things than we used to see, but this one's going to be a tough one to top.
It'll be hard to top this one.
This is going to be a tough one to top, but that is one of those things that's going to carry forward for sure. And look, I mean, I think with Deebo. By the way,
AJ D. Brown.
AJ D. Brown, as I wrote in the thing. Keith, of course, our resident wordsmith, said he's been trying to tie Dabo Sweeney to Deebo Samuel for a Dabo Deebo Do joke.
Yeah, thank you,
Keith. Good job. But he's exerting his influence right now, for sure, putting the pressure on them. And I look, to me, when you make the decision to tell Jeff Darlington, you know, you make the decision again with your agent to say, okay, Darlington, we're asking for a trade. You're really, I don't want to say burning the bridge, but you know, on the 49ers side of things, what are you thinking? I mean, you're probably thinking, like, we just have to do this, right? I'm sure this is after conversations that resulted in him figuring out that he's not going to get what he wants to get.
Can you imagine telling John Lynch over there, like, hey, this offseason, you're going to trade Deebo Samuel before you trade Jimmy Garoppolo? Yeah. How do you think that one goes over?
But you'll still have Jimmy. Now, you put Jimmy in the slot, you know, you can make Jimmy a running back, quarterback, receiver. How about that? Yeah.
Hey.
John Lynch, man. They're in a spot. But, you know, look, they can make it. They can make a move. And actually, so Tim Kawakami, who does a great job for us at The Athletic, a columnist out in San Fran, he wrote an interesting piece and how there are rumblings that Shanahan may have someone he covets, you know, in the draft, which, of course, that's what it comes down to. Okay, move him, get a pick, get one of these – do whatever you need to do to move to wherever you need to move to get one of these receivers high in the draft. And, okay, you're back on a – the you start the clock on a rookie deal. The problem is Deebo Samuel is awfully good. A.J. Yep. Brown is awfully good. So there's a lot of great plans that go into a draft, and you think a player is one thing, and it's part of why it's so fascinating is so often that player is not that thing.
Well, does the attention from the New York Jets now pivot from A.J. Brown to Deebo Samuel at this point? I mean, we've talked a lot about the Jets rumors being stirred up by basically the New York Jets about A.J. Brown. Do they turn their attention now to Deebo Samuel? Like, I mean, I'm wondering.
They've got to, right?
I'll say, as a resident Packers fan, I wouldn't mind using some picks. Go get him.
Sure. I mean, and with the Jets, of course, I mean, Robert Saleh, I mean, he was with Deebo in San Fran. Mike LaFleur, Matt's little brother, was his receivers coach.
Yep.
So you got the built-in connection there, too. The Texans, which is interesting, but the Texans, this is, you know, Tim wrote this, that they're shopping that 13 and could be one of the teams in the mix. I mean, I don't think it would be a stretch to think that Davis Mills would enjoy throwing to Deebo Samuel.
I think you're right.
I mean, put him in the AFC South.
That would probably extend their window to win.
There we go. And someone on the text line was like, hey, how about trade? Why don't we just trade, get the trade going with the Titans and the 49ers? Just trade the receivers.
Could be. Well, Joey from Gallatin wide says back. Deebo for AJ, straight up.
Yeah, there you go. Wide. And then the Titans have a wide back, as they call him.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that. Never mind. I'll tell you off air.
Or running receiver.
Yeah, there is that too. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Hal Gill coming up. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds. Speaking of the Preds, join 102.5 The Game this Saturday night for the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade. You can have drink specials, enter to win Preds tickets, and watch the Preds take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade, located at 114 2nd Avenue South downtown. The puck drops at 6 o'clock this Saturday night. We'll be right back with Hal Gill, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, former Preds defenseman, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Check out their new location at 500 Cool Springs Boulevard. Skillsy, I hear you'd like to join in on our rants. We can make a Skillsy rant happen for sure.
Yes, you guys are talking about specialization, and man, it drives me crazy. Youth sports is crazy right now.
It's
spot on.
It's nuts the way that it's transpired that way. Obviously, how big win for the Preds the other night against the Calgary Flames. We had Dan Lambert on earlier. He said that's probably the best game they've played in a little while here. What did you make of that game, and what do you make of overall where the Preds game is as they head into a massive back-to-back set coming up this weekend with Tampa and Minnesota?
It's funny. I thought that game was a perfect balance between – hey, let's play it safe and let's go all out for it, right? They were right in the middle where they played it safe for the most part in the first period, didn't force their chances, but they weren't sitting back. They weren't, you know, they weren't just kicking it and punting it every time. They were moving through the ice, and so the first period it was a lot of back and forth, and I think you take that against a good team like Calgary. So I liked their game. I liked where it was at. And, you know, if their power play gets going, their penalty kill goes, they can play 5-on-5 and play that steady game. And so I like where they're going. I like where they're at, especially after that abysmal second period that they had against St. Louis. They needed a good bounce back, and they got it. So, you know, now the pressure's on. I think they need two wins out of these next five games, and it's not going to be easy, that's for sure. So, Tampa, why not try to get it done as soon as possible, go on the road and get a big win against Tampa?
Yeah, no question about it. I'm curious, going back to that St. Louis game, I don't know if you were ever a part of a game where y'all gave up 7 goals in a period, but just when things go really bad quickly for a team as a player, you know, us in the media, fans, we often freak out about that stuff. As a player, what's kind of the mindset like when something goes as wrong as it did in terms of trying to respond from that quickly?
Yeah, when it goes that fast, it's like, if I'm putting myself in their shoes and what's going on, it's shocking. It's like, whoa, this can't, doing everything right, why is this happening? You know, because you feel, you know, you get scored on and you tighten it up. You go, okay, all right, wait, like, that can't happen again. And when it happens again and again and again, I assume these guys, in my mind, are feeling that shock. And then you go into that second intermission going, infuriating. You know, this is the ultimate in frustration, because you know that you're a team that plays better than that. It wasn't happening. So, you know, I'm not sure how those guys looked at it. You know, I assume some guys are going to throw things and swing sticks. Other guys are just going to sit there and pull their hair out. Other guys are going to say, I need to let this go. I can't process this right now. So I think it's a mixed bag of emotions in the locker room. But, you know, the third period wasn't the end of the world. They came out and they played okay. The big thing is that response, right? That response that they had against Calgary is what you needed. And that's really becomes the focal point when it's all said and done.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Hal, you know, Matt Duchene reaches the 40-goal mark the other night, first player in franchise history to hit that mark. Forsberg's right behind him at 39. First off, just from as a former player, your perspective on that number and the significance of what that means, and what did you think of the reaction in Bridgestone when Duchene did hit number 40 the other night?
Yeah, no, it was pretty awesome. I love that Forsberg went and got the puck too.
Right? Yeah.
You know, those guys are battling, going for it, and Phil was right over to grab it. But yeah, it's funny because, you know, I came in the league and it was, the joke was, get 20 goals, make $1 million. Get 20 goals, make $1 million. And so 20 goals was really the big number that everyone was trying to get to, right? All the forwards were trying to get to that number. And then, you know, you look at, okay, 30, wow, that's pretty awesome. Now you get up to 40, it's like, 40 is like a crazy number that you're thinking, okay, 50 is right around the corner. And so you just don't see it. Well, you used to not see it as much. And I feel like now there's, and maybe it's because of the couple of years through COVID where you just didn't see those numbers at all. And now you're seeing guys put up these big numbers, 100-point seasons and 40-goal years, 50-goal years. It's just, it's crazy, but what a remarkable story for Matt Duchene. I mean, how awesome is that? To go through the seasons that he's had, reinvent himself, kind of get his confidence and change his game and play the right way, you know, whether it's him personally or John Hines or coaches or players around him, his family, there's a lot of things that go into the psyche of a player, but he's got it right now, so it's nice to see that turnaround for Dutchie.
Hal, what do you think of the defense core at the moment? I thought they defend. I mean, Calgary's a team that puts up a ton of shots on goal, and I know that they were on the second half of a back-to-back, but I just thought the Predators defended really well the other night. What did you make of that performance and where those guys are right now as a group with those six on defense?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because with Calgary, you know, maybe a first-round matchup, we'll see. They have a different decor. They don't get a lot of scoring from their back end. You know, we have some guys, in particular, Roman Josi, who's putting up a ton of numbers. And so it's a different build and setup. But Calgary defends the front of the net really well. They're big, they're strong. And the Preds don't have that size. So they need to move the puck a little quicker. They need to be better on their exits and moving the puck because they're not going to be able to defend as well in the D zone. But I thought they stepped up in that regard. So it was a pretty solid game. You said it. Calgary's high-flying offense was kind of put at bay, and they kept them to the perimeter and stopped them off the rush, which was huge. So I was happy with the way they played. You know, you get Lazon back, and then you have you have seven really good guys that can come in. Obviously, you have the higher end guys with Josi and Ekholm, you know, Carrier and Fabro, good young puck movers. They can defend well. They have good gaps. And then you have Borowiecki. That toughness is tough to replace, especially when you get to playoffs. Benning, kind of that same thing. You kill penalties, block shots. And then Lazan brings that toughness as well. So I like the way they're set up. And I wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the year. So it's been a nice surprise that the back end of that D-core has really stepped up. So, you know, I think they give the possibility to make things happen, and that's all you're looking for when you get to the playoffs.
Hal, last thing for you here. It's interesting because if the Predators make the playoffs, which I think is likely, but if they make the playoffs at this point, it's probably going to be either Colorado or Calgary. What do you make of those two matchups? Obviously, Colorado is the team that all the Predators fans want to avoid because they've been at the top of the Western Conference all season long. I mean, I understand that way of thinking, and if you force me to choose, I would rather play Calgary. But I don't think it's that big of a difference. What do you make of kind of the matchups that the Predators could have staring them in the face?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Pick your poison. You know, if you get into a playoff series where you're guaranteed four games, that's four games where you can make Cale Makar's every night miserable. Sam Girard, another smaller defenseman, you can make them miserable in four games. And, you know, hopefully you make it, you give them a run and it's six or seven games. And then do they really want to go back for pucks? Are they that good that they can move the puck in time, or are the hits going to wear them down? Whereas Calgary, I think you go different. It's a difference breakdown. Can you play with speed? Can you make those guys move? Can you get to the interior? Can you battle through those big defensemen? That's going to be a different challenge. And offensively, you know, it's as good as Calgary is with Gaudreau and Tkachuk and Lindholm, those guys are a great line. You're looking at, you know, Landeskog and MacKinnon and Rantanen. Those guys are going to be buzzing. Can you frustrate them? Can a deep pair like Ekholm and Carrier take away enough time and space to make them frustrated? Because that's been their problem in the past. They lost in the first round and they just fell apart. Their whole season has been about mental toughness. Can they grind through those struggling times when they don't get that production from the top line? But they do have depth. So, you know, you look at those battles, it's two different teams, but two huge challenges either way you face them. There's a reason why they're at the top of their game. They're top of the standings because they're good teams, but it's a little bit different build.
Hal Gill, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, featuring their location at 500 Cool Springs Boulevard. Hal, tell us about your friends at Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, well, we got at 500 Cool Springs, you said. We got 1645 West Main Street and Lebanon. And, of course, I was just there this morning at Hadding Pike. You can go over and lots of options right now. You know what? My daughter just got the strawberry dragon fruit refresher. If you haven't had that, it's not my game. It's not my thing, but it's pretty darn good. So if you're looking for a summer treat, a spring treat, take the kids over and grab one of those. They're delicious. Lots of other options. I tell you what, $150 for a five-pack of Munchkins. And if you want to make a kid happy, you know, spend $1.50 and get some Munchkins. Put a smile on their face. Of course, I'm always smiling when I got my dunks because I get my Dunkin' Midnight. And pretty soon I'm going to be getting my iced coffee. So go treat yourself and go get your dunks.
Hal, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week. All righty. Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, former Preds defenseman, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Joins us every Thursday morning at 9:30. We'll come back. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll also make sure that Joe Rexro is okay. That's coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rexro here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think, yes, you got to have some concern because Sombrio did a good job, and he was kind of next in line, and now they're in a tougher spot from a depth standpoint. So it's put them in quite a bind. And
Joe Rexroad recovering from whatever just happened to Joe Rexroad. I think you may be unplugged as well. So. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Hey, Ladarius unplugged me. That was good. So did we hear the crash, though? So I just broke a chair here. I apologize.
We have another situation here in the studio.
Sorry, Willie.
You did not break a chair this time. So there's been this jersey of Willie Donick from his Vanderbilt days hanging up in our studio for the last few months. I guess I don't remember where this came from. It may have been like, I don't know, Dick's Last Resort or something down there on 2nd Avenue. But it ended up in our studio, and it is no more. The jersey's fine. The display holding the jersey, no more from Joe Rexroad.
Yeah, it's been sitting here on this chair that Ryan Porth gave me, and I've wondered about it a couple times. Like, is it okay? Is it sturdy? Is the glass firm? I mean, I have thought about it, and now it just exploded into bits. But I don't know how exactly. But it just hit the ground. The glass actually broke into two. The frame is complete. Like the fact that the frame just completely blew up, like it's like destroyed. Touching something, it turns to dust.
I think something fair to mention is that Robbie Stanley deserves an award for conducting that interview professionally while Joe and I are just muted. I was dying, and Joe is just picking up the pieces, just showing them through the glass.
I just want to point out, I've kept going when Joe has broken a chair, and I kept going in that last segment when he broke the display in here. So you can throw anything you want to throw at me in the middle of a radio interview. Doesn't matter. I'm going to keep going.
It is very impressive. It is very, very impressive. Chase has tweeted out something. God, yeah, there's me with the pieces of Willie's frame. I'm sorry, Willie, but the key is the jersey's okay, so this can get reframed and be all right. And Robbie, that sharp shard of glass is like inches from killing you, so be careful to you.
Nate on the text line says, I didn't hear anything this time, but did Joy destroy a chair again? No, it did not happen again. Not this time. It was only once, and that was Chase's fault, too. So we're going to put that one on Chase.
So when you first started playing the audio there, I actually thought it was just from that. Like, at first I thought it was like, so was there any noise when this fell?
Oh, yeah.
There was.
Oh, okay. There was?
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to go back and listen.
Now you can make it just a collage of mishaps.
My microphone was still on when the thing hit the chair.
Willie, we'll get you an even better frame, buddy.
Oh, man.
It's a sweet jersey.
It's a sweet jersey.
We can actually look at all of the jersey now. Look at the front. Let me see. No, actually, it's still like tied to the rest of the frame that has not been exploded.
Joe Rexroad is very destructive. I mean, you didn't really do anything this time. All you did was sit down.
I sat down. So that's twice. All I've done is sit down and something disastrous happens.
You also slapped yourself in the face with the headphones today again.
Wow, she just kind of ratted you out there. That was good stuff.
That's a fair point, too.
Chris on the text line, going back to the Debo AJ stuff. If Debo goes to the Jets, then Corey Davis can get back to focusing on blocking again. It's coming from Chris on the text line. Got to get Davis back in there blocking.
I didn't see Corey Davis's PFF blocking grades from last year. I'll have to go check that out. It'd be very interesting. I'm sure he was good. I'm sure he was a good blocker. But with Debo, yes. Now you really hone in on what your strength is.
Here's maybe the most random text we've ever gotten from Heidi from Dixon. It says, I have a random weird prediction. I'm guessing Rob's house has a junk drawer, Michelle has a catch-all table, and Joe has both, and they're both full. I'll send gifts to the studio if I'm right. This is coming from Heidi from Dixon. I don't know where that came from, but that's just the prediction that I'm sharing.
Heidi, you start drinking early today?
But is it not true? Come on, we definitely all have junk drawers because I have one. I also have a junk closet that I just shut the door on. So,
I think now that I think about it, I think I've got the junk drawer and the catch-all table. So maybe it's me.
Most of my drawers have become junk drawers. Even though they're supposed to be clothing drawers, they're still junk drawers.
Thank you, Heidi. We appreciate
Heidi's
it.
Heidi's had some interesting contributions today.
Got a texture that says hashtag Rex Destruct Road.
Not bad.
That's a tongue twister, but yeah, it's not bad.
That's not bad. Keith, you know, Keith might be able to streamline that for you, but that's pretty good. Yeah, so what were you going to talk about this segment
before
I started destroying things in the studio? So A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, the Titans talk in an hour and a half.
Yep.
Probably not expecting that someone might bring up Deebo Samuel's mom's Instagram live conversation.
But it could happen.
It has entered the chat.
You could bring it up.
It has entered the chat. Yeah, it's fine.
So are we expecting to hear from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel today? Who do we think? I mean, it's the pre-draft media availability. So I should assume at least Robinson.
Yeah, I should go back and look at the email. But I don't know that it specifies Titans Advisory, pre-draft presser. It just says, yeah. So, yeah, I think it'd be both of them. That'd be my guess. I mean, Robinson would be for sure, I would think, since we're talking draft.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's become a little more spicy, huh? Talk about that. We can talk about Tannehill. You know, Jared, you know, he better show up, by the way, because, of course, his thing is, oh, the soft media. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, yesterday I'm like, there might be like one or two questions about Tannehill. Like, what else could there be? And then he goes into the, yeah, well, that's, and he's like, well, I won't say it. Okay, so what? So I want to know the 4, 5, 6 questions that can be asked about Tannehill not being at the stuff right now.
Yeah.
Like, what's the stream of questions? Okay, I want to ask that again. Can you talk about that again and again? I mean, you asked the question and then what? I mean, I want Jared
fire,
to
Joe.
Teach us. Come teach us how to be tough media, Jared.
Hold their feet to the fire. That's what we get all the time on the text line.
Literally.
Make sure you do it.
Jared, literally hold their feet to the fire today. I want you to actually grab John's foot and bring a lighter. That's like what I do in the studio to things that hold Willie Donick mementos.
It's just totally up in flames. Make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox at First Horizon Park. The pregame show with Jeff M. starts at 6:20, and first pitch is at 6:35. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Got the Sounds game tonight, Memphis taking on Minnesota in Game 3 tonight as well in the NBA playoffs. You can win this Game 3 tonight if you're Memphis. You've reestablished home court in the series, and then you can kind of go for the throat in Game 4, too. So it would be nice to see the Grizzlies go up and get it done. If they play like they did in Game 2, they should be in pretty good shape tonight.
Yeah, I think in Game 2, you saw more of what you would have expected to see in the series. But, hey, I like Minnesota, and when you have two players like they have who can really cause problems for you, it's a big game at home, should be a good atmosphere. I'm super intrigued by this game.
It's going to be interesting. And Elijah brought this up the other day on DDC, but sometimes the Anthony Edwards experience, he's great, and he hits every shot, and sometimes it's a little bit of an adventure. A little bit more of an adventure the other night for Anthony Edwards, but back at home, you do typically shoot better at home. So we'll see what happens on that front. Titans press conference coming up at 11:30 today. The pre-draft media availability. Joe Rexroad will be there. I have you covered as well. So we'll talk about that tomorrow morning. See, should be some interesting stuff coming out of that.
I'm going to ask what they plan to do with their 7th-round pick. Actually, they don't have a 7th-round pick, do they?
I don't think so.
They have a 6th-round pick. Okay. Their 6th-round pick.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. We'll see what Willie's response is to Joe's destruction. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.